Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a loaded Tuesday. Man, we are packed today. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. We are packed today. I love, you know, at this time of the year, everybody complains. I hear everybody lamenting there's nothing going on in sports. It is jammed. Last night, we almost had, we could have had a near-fatal accident in NASCAR. Thank God. Ryan's okay, Ryan Newman. It was a riveting race down to the end. We got a baseball controversy. Joy Taylor is joining me. You get so many emotional things. We got the NBA's off for a couple days. It's the only thing I don't like about LeBron, he made the All-Star break longer. Come on, let's go. I need games.
Well, I mean, there's still a few little NBA stories out there. We're going to talk a little NBA today.
So let me start this. Can your career be over before it starts? I think it's possible with Joe Burrow. So as a dad, and every dad listening is going to either, they're going to laugh when I say this because they know it's true. The truest answer is always the shortest from your kids. The more they start ad-libbing about what happened to the cookie, what happened to the food in the refrigerator, the more they start ad-libbing, they're making stuff up. The truest answer is I didn't do it or I did do it. So whenever I see a politician or a kid or a boss or a talk show host, you know, cornered a little bit, give me the truth, and they extend their answer and they use words over and over, it's like because they don't have an honest answer. So Joe Burrow is winning a bunch of awards, right? And he's at these awards, the Davey O'Brien Award, and they ask him about Cincinnati. And instead of just saying, can't wait to be drafted by the Bengals, I mean, he's an Ohio kid, right? He grew up watching the Bengals. He was asked about the Bengals, and his answer, he uses the word process a lot.
This is a long process, right? And they have their process that they have to go through. And so I'm just blessed to be in the position that I'm in. If they select me, they select me.
He says, look, this is a long process. They have their process. Later in the bite, he says, it's a long process. A lot of people say a lot of things. He also has a quote, I do have some leverage. Why would leverage matter if you're going to the Bengals? Listen, Joe Burrow's smart. His dad's a coach. His dad was smart. There's four organizations, maybe five, but mostly four, that are poorly run. Washington, Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Detroit. Matt Stafford's career has been affected. There is no question he would be better in a better organization. The Bengals don't have a playoff win since 1990 in Boomer Esiason. It was so long ago the team they beat, the Houston Oilers, doesn't exist. It is hard not to stumble into a playoff win, I don't know, in two decades. Don't you just kind of stumble into it? You get a lucky break, your schedule works out, your rival in the division has injuries. Cincinnati's poorly run. If Burrow signs, he is locked for 7 years. It's over. It's over. Drew Brees is rare. Drew Brees is one of the only quarterbacks in league history that got a reboot and turned his career around. Steve Barkowski and Carson Palmer were both drafted by bad organizations. Steve Barkowski came out this week. I remember him. He played at Cal. He was the good-looking, golden arm, played at Cal, went to lousy Atlanta. Atlanta at the time was lousy. It ruined his career. He said this week, he goes, I spent more time in the hospital than I actually did. He should pull an Eli Manning, said Barkowski. I know what it's like to go to a bottom feeder. I spent more time at a hospital recuperating from injuries my first 3 years than I did throwing touchdowns. It was tough. Cincinnati's got a bad O-line. They have an 84-year-old cheap owner who acts as a GM. They have the smallest scouting department. I don't know if Zach Taylor can coach. I hope he can. I think he may be able to, but I don't know. They didn't look brilliantly coached last year, and that division has got nothing but good defenses, and Joe Burrow's going to get eaten alive. This is tough, man. This is a real decision. It's not like this in baseball. It's not like this in the NBA. If you get drafted as a quarterback in the NFL and they like you, you are trapped for 7 years. They can franchise you and again and transition tag you. You're trapped. It's a real decision. Carson Palmer played for the Bengals. He came on Speak for Yourself about a month ago in Miami and said this.
I mean, if you just look at the history of the organization, they've successfully been very unsuccessful throughout their entirety. So I took my stance with the organization back when I did for a reason, and I felt like it was time for me to move on.
Yeah. By the way, Joe Burrow is being coached now by Jordan Palmer, Carson Palmer's brother. So this is very real. I have said this. Tua is going to have a better career than Joe Burrow. Why? Because of where he lands. Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson are going to have better careers probably than Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold because of where they land. You get trapped. This is real stuff here. It's why I believe Joe Burrow has to push back as long as this ownership group is in place. It's a cheap franchise. It's dysfunctional. And if you look at the four or five teams that don't win playoff games in this league, they all have one thing in common: bad owners. Washington, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Detroit, bad owners. Joe Burrow, this is serious. It's time to make a tough decision. I'll say it again. I think he should pull an Elway. I think he should pull an Eli. Okay, recency bias is a very, very powerful thing. The latest thing that happens is always the worst. You go to social media, the world's ending every 15 minutes. Justin Turner plays for the Dodgers. He's a very good baseball player. He's fun to watch. He's scrappy. He's likable. He's relatable. He doesn't like that his Dodgers, he felt, got cheated by the Astros in their sign stealing. We know now the Astros did steal signs to the degree we're not quite sure, but their GM lost a job, their manager lost a job, and they lost four valuable draft picks. We'll see if suspensions come sooner or later. But here was Justin Turner yesterday ripping the Astros and lamenting the sport and the commissioner, Rob Manfred, for not handing out stiffer penalties.
Talking about precedent, talking about there's never been a precedent. It's because it's never happened before. It's the first time in the game, to my knowledge, that this has happened. And he just set the precedent. He set a weak precedent. The reason every guy is in this room, the reason every guy is, you know, working out all offseason and showing up to camp early and putting in all the time and effort is specifically for that trophy, which, by the way, is called the Commissioner's Trophy. So for him to devalue it the way he did yesterday is just tells me how out of touch he is with the players in this game. And, you know, at this point, the only thing devaluing that trophy is that it says Commissioner on it.
All right, let's settle down. A, Major League Baseball is going to be fine. FIFA and the World Cup have been riddled with corruption. The Olympics and the IOC have been riddled with corruption. They've never been more valuable, ever. Bidding wars for Olympics, bidding wars for the World Cup. Commercials are going for $1 million for a 30-second spot. NBC makes a fortune on the Olympics. Fox does real good on the World Cup, and if both were on the open market, there'd be bidders from almost every network. They're valuable content. Ratings will go up for baseball this year. We now have a second villain, the Yankees and the Astros. The Yankees outbid everybody for Gerrit Cole. They're the evil empire. Now we have a second. Hollywood writes scripts like this. There'll be spring training records for people wanting to watch the Astros get plunked. They're villains. We now have a second villain in the sport. Revenues, relevance. Baseball has never been this relevant a week out of spring training? I've never talked this much baseball. B, what about the kids? I saw a quote here by Justin Turner. What about the kids? We're trying to inspire those kids to want to be baseball players. Yeah, I'm sure they'll all quit Little League over this. What about the kids? Don't worry about the kids. Adults can be schmucks. Kids are wonderful. I got kids, six of them. They're great. I'm never disappointed in my kids. I'm disappointed in my neighbors, in adults, in people I've worked with. I'm disappointed in adults on Twitter every 15 minutes. I want to strangle somebody. I'm never disappointed in kids. Kids see images all the time. Do they become porn stars because they occasionally go to Pornhub? Nah, they're kids. They figure it out. They'll handle it. Kids are fine. They see horrible images all the time by adults. And they go, ooh, creepy adult. I don't want to do that. Kids are fine. Don't worry about the sport. And C, Major League Baseball withstood the steroid era. This is a recency bias. Everything that happens now is the worst. I'm an old guy. Let me give this context. For 15 years, baseball's best players and some of their average ones were taking jobs, Guys who were AAA lifers suddenly became big leaguers, and clean guys in the big leagues lost their careers. You don't think that's worse than that? Than this? It was 15 years of it. If you go back to 1994 through about 2010, the 15-year heart of the steroid era, you know who won? The Yankees won 5 titles. You wanted to play small ball? You couldn't. You got squished. The Red Sox were cheating. 2 titles. The Texas Rangers, 3, 4, and 5 hitters were taking cattle steroids. They were winning MVPs every year. And they would have won World Series, except they couldn't get past the Red Sox and the Yankees, who had more talented cheaters. And then steroids got cleaned out. You know what happened? You could win small ball. The San Francisco Giants started winning situationally with small ball. You couldn't do that during the steroid era. The smartest people in baseball were getting trumped by cattle steroids. Now, the Kansas City Royals in the last decade won with their bullpen. You can win situationally. You can win with small ball. You can say what you want about the Astros, but they won basically through the draft. They just nailed about 6 draft picks. That you couldn't do that with the steroid era. People lost jobs. Offensive records were smashed. Series were changed. Losers became winners. And in a sport with no salary cap, who benefited? Teams like the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Rangers that were massive payroll teams. Because if you gave steroids to a 240 hitter, he hits 290. But if you give steroids to a star who hits 308, he hits 350 and you can't get him out. I mean, the last time the Padres won was in the steroid era. It's not in the stealing signs era. They had Ken Caminiti and Greg Vaughn. They won. The Padres won. It could take average teams and make them great. It was affecting every stat, every game, every series, every number. Guys were hitting 58 jacks, 140 RBI, batting 340. You couldn't get him out. Guys were Superman. This is a team that did bad things. Basically, we've been stealing signs forever in baseball. They made it a little more industrial, should we say. And I don't like it. And they lost draft picks. And they should have some suspensions. And Manfred should probably find more guys. But taking away trophies? This is recency bias. The most recent controversy, the world's going to end. FIFA, World Cup's never been stronger. IOC, Olympics have never made more money. The NBA, the ratings are down. So what? If the NBA was on the open market, this network and every network would bid on it. It's good entertaining content. Take a deep breath. The kids are okay. Baseball's okay. And we got a second villain. I don't have to like everybody in sports. I don't like Floyd Mayweather, but I pay to watch him fight because I can separate art from artist. Baseball's fine. Go back to your regularly scheduled lives.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Yesterday, it was cats and dogs living together with Rick Bucher, who's been covering the NBA since the early 90s, so I'm bringing Bucher back. Justin Timberlake brought sexy back. I'm bringing Bucher back. Brought to you by Mercedes, the best or nothing. And by the way, Bukes always looks like a guy who drives one because he's always elegantly, sharply dressed. So how about this one? Interesting. Sometimes you just put a little out there in the feeding frenzy.
Yes.
So the Lakers have Giannis's brother somewhere in the organization.
Not by accident. I've seen their practices.
And Giannis mentioned yesterday something about that. What did he say?
He said, essentially, he was asked, you know, what would it be like to play with your brothers? And he said, whether it's Milwaukee or L.A., it would be great. I know our mom would love us playing together. And, of course, as soon as you say anything other than the place that you are,
uh-oh.
Woo! But that it's, the reading into it is way too much. If you look at all of the international players, and Giannis fits right into this, they don't have the American mindset. They are all. Look at all of them. And I will throw it to you since you put me on the spot yesterday.
Oh, I did. The burner.
Name a single international player who has expressed dissatisfaction with where he is and has forced his way to another team. A great player. Maybe any player, but certainly a great player. You're not going to find it.
Porzingis.
But he didn't. But he didn't. The relationship went sour. And he actually didn't get to go where he wanted to go. And I don't know that I would put him in the category of great international players.
He's pretty darn good.
But that's not bad. That's not bad that you pulled that out.
You put me on the burner, I answer.
But,
Now, I would say this. It's almost like when you're an American and you travel internationally.
Yeah.
Most Americans are on their best behavior. It's not our country.
Right.
So when European athletes come over,
sure,
they are a little more, I would say they're respectful. You're respectful when you're across, when you're out of the place you grew up in.
Sure.
You go, you travel outside the country, you say please and thank you more to be respectful to the Europeans or the Australians. And European players come over here and they respect the NBA.
If you were an American soccer player,
yeah,
and I don't know, I mean, Christian Pulisic is probably the closest that's, yeah, come to that. But if an EPL team were to say, we want you, we're going to sign you, and we're going to build our team around you.
Yeah.
Do you think that American player would ever go, yeah, I, you know, Liverpool, thanks, but I think I'd like to play for Chelsea?
No, I think
that would never happen.
No, I think it's a really interesting point that European players, listen, when you grow up in our country and you're a star at AAU, you have a sense of ownership. Like,
sure,
hey, I'm the guy, and I've been told that since 12. I'm going where I want to. I think that's a very good point by you.
Yeah. So, I mean, you look at Dirk, you look at Pau Gasol, you look at Tim Duncan, Manu, Tony, go down the line of all the great international players who have been made cornerstones on NBA teams. They're grateful that an NBA team thinks that highly of them, that they would build their team around them. The idea that they need to go to play in LA or New York or Houston simply is not in their mindset the way it is with American players.
Guy comes up to me yesterday. And I was at the gym crushing it, probably benching 500, I forget. And the guy says, hey, I got a solution to tanking. And I'm
okay.
Like, all right, his name was Michael. I said, throw it out there. He went on to say what a fine broadcaster I was, but let's not get into that. He said, why don't you pick a date in the season, and you don't have to disclose it to players. It's like an envelope thing, and you have a date. And whatever the standings are, that date is, it could be game 29. That is the order of your draft. Now, you think it's crazy, but we know it gets established pretty early who's bad, who's not. This way, there's no benefit last 55 games to tank. But I thought about this driving in today after my fine conversation with Michael. The fear of tanking is nonsense. It's nonsense. This has always been a league where two things happen. One, the stars end up generally from Dr. J in Philadelphia. They end up at places they want to be, and those are often more glamorous, urban, cool cities. That's just the way the league's always worked, right? It's mostly the way Kareem ends up in Los Angeles, and yeah, Shaq ends up in Los Angeles. Players end up, the star players have leverage, and they use it to get what they want, regardless of where they're drafted. Secondly, it's not like the Lakers and the Celtics generally have the number one pick. Zion does go to New Orleans,
mm-hmm,
and Ja Morant does go to Memphis,
mm-hmm,
and Marvin Bagley, though not playing well, did go to Sacramento. That bad front offices dictate the bottom in this league. It's not manipulating the lottery in the draft. The bad GMs stink. Cleveland once again stinks without LeBron.
Right.
That's not about tanking. They keep getting picks.
Right.
Is that we worry too much about this, who's going to get the number one pick. The league gives us two things. Bad GMs and, yeah, stars end up where they want to be, and we waste way too much time worrying about this stuff.
Well, I agree, because the difficulty is that when you tank, when you go deep, and this more so now than ever before, it's hard to get back up. It's hard once you get that bad. It creates a stain where any quality play, like not even the stars, just the veterans that want to be in a good situation, look at it and go, why would I go there? It's bad basketball. It's going to make me look bad. I'm still trying to play and be relevant in this league. Why would I go there? And I agree with you 100%. The other part is, like, we worry about the tanking for particular players. Well, but there's no guarantee as what those players are going to be once they get to the NBA.
Especially now, because they're all 19 when they get into the league.
Exactly. It's all on development anyway. That's, so if you don't have a good team,
rewards better franchises.
Exactly. And so you look at look at Utah or Indiana or even Boston. None of them concertedly tanked. They weren't very good at one point, but they didn't try to just spiral to the bottom.
So which team did you just give?
Boston? Indiana, Utah, and Boston.
And by the way, which one now is the best? My opinion, Boston. Why? Because they have the better front office and the better coach.
Yes.
And that decides where you – it's not this tanking stuff.
Right.
Even Steph Curry with the Warriors and Klay Thompson are better because of the development. All their players develop.
Right. Yes. Well, and the Warriors also caught lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, they got some breaks.
Everything came together. You got Steph at the right – at the right number because of his ankles. You got Draymond Green on his second round pick. I mean, a lot of good things happened. And then you had a Mark Jackson had a relationship with Andre Iguodala, and Iguodala comes in. So yeah, there can be some unique situations. It's a very interesting question about the Warriors moving forward because they captured and they've created a culture, but can you sustain it after 5 years? Can they sustain it?
Oh, God, yes.
San Antonio has. Well, I believe that they will, but that's something to be proved because if you look at Golden State's history, that traditionally is not what they've been.
Well, in the recent history, it is. They're well run now.
Yes, they are.
The smart people.
But they weren't, and we'll see. We'll see. I mean, if you look at their development,
okay.
Steve Kerr and I had this conversation in Vegas during the national team practices last summer. You know, there is a price to be paid when you're drafting 30th every year. And if you look at their roster, name a great young player that they've developed over the last 5 years.
Yeah, you know what? Andrew Wiggins is young. They'll develop him. He'll be better. I don't think you worry about that. I don't think the Yankees worry about player development. If they can do one infielder every 3 or 4 years, they're good.
Okay, but still. Name me. I'm putting you on the spot since you've dodged me on the Porzingis one. Name me a young player that the Warriors have developed over the course of their last 5 years.
I don't think it's hurt the franchise. I can't name one. So it shows that it's just not valuable. It doesn't matter. Lakers don't develop
it. Wait a minute. No, we just talked about how developing young players is part of the fabric of a franchise.
But once they're developed, Klay and Steph and Draymond, then it's about winning titles. Now it's about adding a free agent piece. They did their developing. They're out of the development stage. They're into the winning games next year, rebooting when everybody's healthy stage.
But you still have to continue to develop young guys and – who's not to say that you got Steph, Klay, and Draymond, and that was just a unique threesome that fit together and did well. I'm not saying that they can't. I'm just saying that the Warriors' history, look, I've lived in the Bay Area. I've seen that team for the last 25 years. They need to prove that they're capable of getting back in the saddle and developing another Steph, developing another Klay, developing another Draymond.
Ja Morant, Zion, you're a GM today. Which do you take next 10 years?
This, Colin, I'm so glad that I'm now regularly on your show because we need to have this on the record. I said it last summer already.
What?
I would have built around Ja Morant.
Oh, I would
he
not
would
have
been my pick, and he's still my pick. I feel as if, to a certain extent, I've already been proven right.
Oh, really? Have you seen the recent Zion games, which get me to a television on a Tuesday night to watch New Orleans basketball?
Okay, so now it's about... what's going to draw you to the...
Well, you don't think...
Have you not been watching Ja all year? I mean,
no.
Talk about electric play.
I watch YouTube highlights. I don't watch him. I rush to a TV to watch Zion. Ja Morant's talented, but it doesn't get me... I watch YouTube highlights. I go to a television to watch Zion. That is power.
You wouldn't...
And I know I'm not alone. I know NBA guys are going to a TV to watch Zion because I see the ratings.
But there is an intrigue in terms of what he's going to be. That is at least half of it.
I like Ja.
I do. Look, I like Ja. I like Zion. I hope he succeeds. I hope he stays healthy. But a big part of it is finding out who is he and what is he going to be.
Oh, I know what Zion is.
What is he?
24 points rolling out of bed because no Euro center wants to take a charge. His body is so unique and explosive. He's 24 a night rolling out of bed. He is going to be a massively productive player with a beautiful touch. And watch him score 28 a game by year 2.
You are exactly right. He's going to be an uber productive player. Is he going to be a winning player?
I think he's got unbelievable self-awareness. I think he's bright as heck. I saw it at Duke. He's a leader, not a follower. Everybody said, don't go back. He goes, I love basketball. I'm going back. He's a leader, not a follower.
I agree. I agree with all of
this
that.
This makes me sound like I don't like Ja Morant. I do. I just love Zion.
See, the problem that I have is everybody is falling over themselves about Zion being back, and they're ignoring what Ja Morant has done with a Memphis Grizzlies team. I mean, he's made them a playoff. He has made them a playoff team. What Zion is doing is complimenting, and I believe he's had a he's created solidarity among that team, but is he the driving force of that team? I'm not ready to say that. Ja Morant is the driving force of the Memphis Grizzlies.
Look at the plus minus. I think Zion could have their Brandon Ingram's their best player, but Zion Jrue Holiday's a better player. I'm not sure.
You
I think
keep giving me numbers.
That's right. Like, hey, you know what my middle name is? Data. I'm not out here just throwing rants out here. It's data boy.
I get the numbers, and the numbers are amazing. The way he fills a box score and how easily fills it.
That's all I care about. Put the ball in the basket. 31 points. What do I care about?
You don't care about what the numbers are at the end of the game on the scoreboard?
They're not good enough to win now. I mean, good God, what can he do? They don't have
a Memphis
bench.
Grizzlies were not supposed to be good enough to win now, and they are. And you know why? Because of that guy.
Well, he's a point guard. He handles the ball more. He's a nice distributor, too.
Good point. Another reason why I would have built around Ja rather than Zion.
All right. It's a good argument, though.
Very good.
Very good stuff today, Bukes. 2 days in a row, I rarely do that. You delivered both days. You get another chance to come on the show. A lot of times I just eliminate guys, take them off the list. You're back. Maybe even tomorrow.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
The New England Brady thing, a lot of people are saying this. I know what a lot of you think as the public. You think we're all just making crap up. You think he's going to go back to New England. And I do think that's about 70%. But I'm going to tell you that people in this business who are connected very close to Tom think he's gone. They think he's gone. Now, I have one great source on this who is close to Tom. Tom, it's not a money issue. He's scared he's going to get trapped. As we've talked about, Tom, the New England Patriots have to pay Tom in mid-March. That way, it's less of a cap hit. So New England's probably going to make him an offer, whatever they make him, March 16th, 17th, 18th. Tom's concern is, I don't know what you're going to do. Do you have the free agents by then? What are you going to do in the draft? Because Tom knows New England doesn't spend money. They like to find value in everybody, even wide receivers. So today a mock draft came out from Mel Kiper. And it's fascinating because it's Tom Brady's worst nightmare. So Mel Kiper has the Patriots' first pick in the first round. Number 23, a receiver? No. A tight end? No. Giving Tom help? No. Jacob Eason, quarterback at Washington. And by the way, that's exactly what they do. So Brady signs and gets his money, and they draft his replacement. And then the Patriots don't have a second-round pick. So by the time they draft at the end of the third round, the 8 to 10 best receivers are gone, and the best tight end's gone. And Bill doesn't spend money on free agent wide receivers or tight ends. This is Brady's fear. Mel Kiper's mock draft is what New England's going to do. So Tom, this is why I think Tom cannot worry about money. He just has to get over the money. This is the least important facet for this. And I know it's respect, blah, blah, blah. Your net worth's a fortune. What Tom needs is weapons. That's why I think I've done my Brady pie. I do think the Tennessee Titans are the best fit. It gives Tom two things he doesn't currently have. Good weapons, star running back, and it gives him fun. Him and Vrabel are boys. And I do think Tom at this point, as his wife said in the documentary, he wants to be respected. Vrabel respects him. He'll be treated like a god in Nashville. And Nashville's a fun city. So I know the fans. I ran into fans a couple weeks ago. I was skiing. And I ran into four guys in a bar, great guys from New Hampshire and Boston. They were Patriot guys. And they're like, you guys in the media. That's how they talk in New Hampshire. You guys in the media. He's signing with the Patriots. And I'm like, I think he is. But don't go crazy on this. Jeff Darlington's an excellent NFL reporter. Darlington is very well connected in the Tom Brady circles. I've known Jeff for a long time. He's a real pro. He thinks it's less than 50-50. Like, Tom is trapped on that. Tom, once you're Tom Brady or LeBron James, here's the one thing you won't stand for. Being trapped. You're not going to tell LeBron. LeBron's life's not perfect. He may not get the perfect coach or the perfect bench or the perfect teammates. He's not going to feel trapped or he's going to bolt. That's why he signed one-year contracts. Tom worked really hard to become a free agent. Okay, he worked really hard to do this. Have leverage, have free agency. He's going to listen to offers. So you're kidding yourself if you think he's not going to listen to offers. And this is the prime issue. Mel Kiper's mock draft is Brady's fear. Is that they don't have a second pick, and the first one, they're just going to pick my replacement. And by the time the Patriots have a third pick, the 8 to 10 best receivers are gone and the best tight end's gone. And we know you don't spend money. Now, I think it's all solvable. I think this is all totally solvable with one move. I think the Patriots should go out and get Stephon Diggs. I think Tom Brady should say, you sign Stephon Diggs, Minnesota, I'm in. I won't even ask for the most money. Stephon Diggs is unhappy in Minnesota. Minnesota would love to have a second pick. They need to get a quarterback to replace Kirk Cousins in 1 year. They also have two good tight ends, a star running back, Adam Thielen. They have a very good defensive roster. They draft well. Minnesota, hey, New England, we'll give you our first round pick. You give us Stephon Diggs. And I think it would solve everything. Tom would have a deep threat. Now Edelman could be your two. Mohamed Sanu could be your three. N'Keal Harry could be your four. That's a pretty good receiving core. That solves a lot of issues. Stephon Diggs, your one. Edelman's a great 2 to 3. Mohamed Sanu and N'Keal Harry, the young kid, gets a little better. That's four guys you can trust. Philip Dorsett still can make an occasional play. They had the other, I forget, Jacoby Myers, the other. Yeah, he's your fifth receiver, your fifth out. They got enough running backs. That's not the issue. So I think you could solve it all if Tom just said, you promised me Stephon Diggs, Minnesota. Minnesota's looking to move off him for the right pick. They are. He's unhappy there. Look at his Instagram. Adam Thielen of the Vikings every day is like, I love America. Stephon Diggs is, pay me some money. Give me respect. Now, he's expensive. He's $14 million, but he's a great player, and they are a loaded roster, and they're going to have to move him anyway, and I think now is the time. You got a team that needs it. So I think the Brady stuff is real. I think he's considering other options. I think Jeff Darlington knows. I think it's real stuff, and I think he could solve all of it. But we know this organization does not have a history of spending $14 million on wide receivers. They just don't.
What's up, everybody? John Middlecoff, 3 and Out Podcast. That's me. That's the show. Go subscribe right now if you like football, because that's what I talk. Football, football, and more football. Coming up on the show this week, we dive deep into the top three quarterbacks in the draft. Burrow, Tua, and Herbert. And also, would Tom Brady really go to the Raiders? We talk about it all. Again, 3 and Out Podcast. Go subscribe right now.
I've always been able to separate art from artist. My friends, some are liberals, some are Trump fans. I can separate people from politics. Some people can, some people can't. I think most people can. I have friends who like Trump. I have friends who hate Trump. I can separate people from their politics. I can separate art from artists. There are athletes who I don't like, but I will pay for a Floyd Mayweather fight, and I don't respect his history and misogyny and some domestic violence situations with women. But if he's fighting Conor McGregor, I'll pay for it, and I don't have to like people. But my bigger problem with Floyd is increasingly, because his career is mostly over, he said yesterday, he goes, you know, nothing against LeBron James, who just got voted male athlete of the decade. He goes, but I'm really the male athlete of the decade. And Mayweather is not even in consideration, considering the last half of the last decade, he never fought a boxer. It was Conor McGregor. So, yeah, Manny Pacquiao was old, Conor McGregor, that's the last half decade for Floyd Mayweather. But it got me thinking, if I had to vote for male athlete of the decade, who would my choices be? And it is remarkable how good the options are. So LeBron James, Tom Brady's got 3 Super Bowls and 2 MVPs. So LeBron's got to be, in my opinion, LeBron would win my athlete of the decade. LeBron James has had, 8 finals appearances. Tom Brady, again, if a little lean to the most parody-driven sport of my life, and he has created a 2-time dynasty. Novak Djokovic in tennis has 16 Grand Slams. That's with Roger Federer as an opponent. That's with Rafi Nadal as an opponent. The Joker's the best tennis player I've ever seen when he's playing his best. He's been a little less consistent than Federer. Michael Phelps has 9 gold medals. That's actually, Mayweather only had 10 fights in a decade. Phelps had 9 gold medals. And then I would say Usain Bolt had 6 gold medals. The world's fastest man is, let's be honest, probably the coolest thing you can ever be called as a dude. I mean, seriously, there's my friend Bob. He's the world's fastest man. Not a lot of toppers on that. But Mayweather doesn't only make the top 5. I wouldn't even consider him for the next five. Then I'd go Rafi Nadal, who is, again, 13 Grand Slams in the last decade. Then I'd go to Steph Curry. He changed the way we play basketball fundamentally, high school, college to pro, multiple titles, unanimous MVPs. We've never had that before. Then I'd go Messi, who was five-time Global Soccer Player of the Year, followed by Ronaldo, who was four-time Global Soccer Player of the Year. And then I would have to give Mike Trout, who I think seven times in the last decade, I think it's seven times, was first or second in the MVP voting. I'd put him 10 because he's had no playoff success. I'm at 10. I would still not even consider Floyd Mayweather. In fact, if it was just Athlete of the Decade, I would put Conor McGregor and Serena both above him. Conor McGregor carried an entire sport. The UFC does not sell for $4 billion without Conor McGregor. It sells for about one. Conor McGregor changed viewing habits, forced people to watch UFC. People watch boxing forever, with or without Floyd Mayweather. And Serena, outside of Djokovic, I don't think there's anybody in the last 10 years in tennis that's even been close to dominating her sport.
I would put Simone Biles above him also if we're just doing Athlete of the Decade.
Mayweather's not even close. He cherry-picks his opposition. He's kind of a money-pursuing, inactive, undefeated boxer.
I mean, there's no arguing his record and his influence
his
on the sport.
His historic legacy is intact.
But for the decade,
it's not even
close.
Now. His last half of the last decade, he fought old Manny Pacquiao and a UFC guy. He doesn't fight enough.
You have
inactive.
To have the whole perspective of the
You
got
to actually show up to work to get Employee of the Year. Got to kind of show up occasionally to work.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Tom Brady, there are varying reports today, and people that are not like slappy blog guy, like real journalists, Jeff Darlington, are like, it's under 50%. Brady may not come back. Brady, it's not really about money at this point. It's about, does New England... do they have the pieces? He doesn't want to go back, and Mohamed Sanu's his go-to guy. He likes Mohamed Sanu. He should be his four, not his one or his two. There's a story out today, mock draft. Mel Kiper has New England taking a quarterback with their first pick, which is very realistic, and they don't have a second pick. That is Brady's worst fear, which is I re-sign, and you don't get me pieces that I need. We need a tight end. We don't have any in the cupboard. We need a one receiver. Now, I think the solution is go get Stephon Diggs. He's unhappy in Minnesota. Trade a first-round pick. Edelman becomes your two. N'Keal Harry's your three. Mohamed Sanu's your four. Jacoby Myers is your five. You got your receivers. Find another, you know, reasonably priced tight end, free agent market, or in the draft. So today, if Tom leaves New England, we're going to play a game called Tominoes. It will begin a series of AFC teams positioning themselves. Where will quarterbacks go? Let's play along.
So, Tom Brady is the biggest domino of the NFL offseason. How would Tom Brady signing with a specific team affect other quarterbacks in the market? It's time to play Tominoes.
All right. Domino one, Joy. Brady signs with the Raiders.
Okay.
That they're going to offer him $60 million for 2 years. Warm weather, quarterback-friendly coach, and a star running back. And a tight end. So let's just say that happens. The stories now is that he's going to list, and he's going to get the biggest offer from the Raiders.
Right.
So domino number two, if that happened, I think Belichick goes and gets Derek Carr.
So just swap.
He's the best quarterback in the roster. He's 28 years old, 101 passer rating, 70% completion rate. He's very efficient. You know, the knock on him is that he's not a put the franchise on my back guy, but they've won multiple Super Bowls with Brady. And a story 2 years ago said that the Patriots don't think Tom is capable of carrying a bad franchise. Domino number three, I think Ryan Tannehill signs with the Titans. Listen, he had the highest passer rating last year in the NFL, and I think people are going to look at Brady if he did leave New England and say, what we can't be is unstable at quarterback. I think Tom leaving New England gets Tannehill a nice contract. All right, Joe Burrow goes domino four to the Bengals. Again, I just think they're going to draft him. They're a stubborn franchise. They're taking him, and Burrow doesn't have the
leverage
to, or at this point, the guts to say no to Ohio. All right, domino five. I think this is, we both believe this. Tua goes to the Miami Dolphins.
Right.
He's a game-changing talent. They got three first-round picks. He's a tremendous leader. He's the kind of human being you can build around. Injuries, give me a 13 games a year. This is the pick I would make. Domino six, the Chargers. Okay, Brady would now be in my division. I'm not passing on a quarterback. I got Mahomes in my division. I got now Brady, if he's the Raiders, in my division. The Chargers, to me, are going to go get Justin Herbert, who is big, strong, mobile, and with their weapons, good enough. Domino seven, kind of predictable. Colts now feel like, all right, Derek Carr's with New England. I got Tom Brady with Oakland. I think the Colts say we got to grow up at quarterback. This offensive line's young. They're not going to be here forever. They get Phillip Rivers. Now it gets interesting. Here are my two crazy dominoes. Domino eight. Teddy Bridgewater to the Redskins. Mm. Okay, I want to hear me out. So Drew Brees, as you reported,
right,
is coming back. So they're not going to pay for both. Washington needs stability. Alex Smith is done playing. That's what I'm told. He's not going to play. He's going to do front office stuff if he wants to. He adds stability. Also, Dwayne Haskins, you're not paying him anything. And there are questions about maturity. Who is the most mature quarterback on the market that you know comes in, learns the playbook, and guides the young guy? Teddy Bridgewater. You can probably get him for $20 million. So you're only paying the quarterback position a reasonable fee. Okay? So you bring in Teddy to start and to teach Dwayne Haskins, this is how it's done. And then domino nine. Cam Newton to the Steelers.
Wow.
Now, my prediction is based on this. Big Ben's health is still very much in the air. Who is the quarterback in the league that is big, active, sometimes struggles with accuracy, but is a big play receiver that does create a little drama that a franchise like Pittsburgh can handle? It's Cam Newton. And Carolina is going to reboot with their new owner. Keekly retires. Olsen's gone. They move off Cam. And they win three games and get the number one or number two pick. I think they're rebooting in Carolina. Cam Newton to the Steelers makes too much sense.
Very interesting.
They can handle big personalities. Mm-hmm. They've done that before. He's the closest replica to Big Ben, a playmaking quarterback. You don't have to pay him a fortune. I don't think the market's going to be huge for him, because I think most teams that need a quarterback are going to get the maturity of Teddy, or they're going to go draft one. We got five first-round draft.